Okay.
Okay, so the first thing is I sent a mail to Wandu saying that I put up like a sub page where my slides are going to be. He put a link from there, and so you can look up the slides that I'm using today. Okay. Okay, so I've been asked to teach a little about planning, automated planning. I work in that area. Let me start on the right note. I should give you many reasons why this series of lectures are likely to be a bust. The first reason is my energy level goes down as the sun does. I kept the windows open, but I don't know. Second reason is, I guess, the ninth reason. In my 14 years at ASU, this is the very first time I'm doing two lectures on the same day. I barely managed to do one, and I'm doing second one in the same afternoon. So if I fall down, don't be surprised. I haven't had my intravenous espresso today. Then I won't sleep tonight. It's too late in the night. And I have a very little mental picture of where you guys are coming from, so I can't quite calibrate what I'm teaching to what you know. So you probably would have, we would have some impedance mismatch. Things are going on. I skipped reason 6 to 2, and then the last reason, I guess the first important reason, is Wanlu is the winner of the Best Teacher Award in the department last year, and I'm not. Which essentially means this is a setup. He tries to make you realize how good you guys have got going by comparing it to what I do in front of you today. Having kind of driven down your expectations as low as they can get, I'll give you one killer reason why you should still pay attention to me. That's because the whole point of AI is planning and acting. Okay, so I'm sure Juan has been trying his best to say data mining is the reason AI exists, but really, you know, all intelligent agents look like this, and they have all these environment issues, they have goals issues, they want to do learning, they want to do CSP, they want to do this, they want to do that. Ultimately, what's in it, all this in aid of? It's in the aid of one important question: what do I do next? Okay. Planning and acting is really about using all the knowledge that you've got, all the representations that you have put together, all the reasoning stuff that you got, to decide what to do next based on your performance metric, based on your goals and so on. And so clearly, despite the messenger, you have to pay attention to the message. It's too important. Okay. This should come slowly, but does not come slowly. I'll just leave it that way. Let's see if... I can't help it. Okay, so not surprisingly, I'm sure you spent a lot of time in the beginning of the semester talking about the different issues that make intelligent agency harder versus easier. Okay, so there are the issues of how is the environment. The environment can be static or dynamic. Okay, and how are the actions that the agent has? The actions can be deterministic in the sense if you do these actions, you know exactly what would happen. Are stochastic in the sense you have only some approximate idea, and the probability is that if you do this, this is the probability that you'll get to this state. This is the probability that you'll get to some other state, and your actions, for example, can be instantaneous. As soon as you do the action, it gets done, and then its effects would be felt. Or they are much more durative, like a process. You start the action, and it, you know, slowly starts having its effects. The environment, the agent itself, when it's looking at the environment, its sensing could be perfect versus imperfect. Okay, perfect means it knows exactly what is the state of the environment, and imperfect means you have cheap sensors. And you know, you have either bad eyes or bad ears or something. And then finally, the goals of the agent themselves could be simple, could be complex, might be interested in full satisfaction. So I have a bunch of goals and all of them must be satisfied. And that's easier than I have a bunch of goals and satisfy as many of them as you can at as high a level of satisfaction as possible, which is your life. You know, you should have fun, you should go to this class, you should do well in the classes. Many, many mutually conflicting goals, and yet the performance metric is do the best in terms of all the goals and objectives. Now, in this, you know, the brown is the good part. That if your environment, your agent, all these things are basically of this brown variety, it's good. It's easy problem to deal with. And the green is the hard one. And as you keep throwing in the green one, reasoning, representation becomes hard. Much more than representation, reasoning becomes hard. Okay? So you should not be surprised that really there is no single problem called planning. There are planning problems. Based on which pieces you take, you could take full goal satisfaction, deterministic actions, instantaneous actions, fully observable world, fully static world, and fully perfect perception. That's the easiest you can get. And that would be the simplest kind of planning. And unfortunately, that winds up being already quite hard. Computationally, planning in that simplest case can be shown to be piece-based complete, which, as far as you're concerned, is worse than NP-hard. Okay. And then it gets worse after that in terms of planning when you have, let's say, as you start, the normal way planning problems are handled is you would start with this brown variety, which is the lowest common denominator, and it's been given a beautiful name called classical planning. You know, it's always a good thing to say that, you know, if you say simplest planning, you won't read it. And so I'll call it classical planning. And then you start from the classical planning, and we'll talk a lot about it actually in probably today's class and maybe next time too. I'll spend much of the time talking about how you do classical planning well, okay? Because that's the easiest one, and if you don't know how to do that, then it's not clear that you can do anything else better. And then you can start removing these assumptions about, oh, it's not deterministic, I can have stochastic actions. That's a different planning problem. You could have durative actions, that's a different planning problem. So right now you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 variations. So how many possible planning problems can I have? Assuming these are Boolean. You're all CS students, right? How many possible planning problems can I have? 2^6. Okay, so there are 2^6 planning problems, and you could look at each of them separately. And of course, you could also say, well, why not I just look at the all green one, and if I knew how to do it, I would teach you that, and you know, that's the only planning that you need to know. But we still don't know how to do that planning, you know, other than winging it. So when everything is the worst possible, then you can always pick an action. Here is the interesting thing. The whole planning really is, planning is just before what action to do next. Okay, and you can always pick an action and do it. And that doesn't need 471. That doesn't need even a bigger, much of a brain. Okay, ants do actions. And you can always pick an action, a random action, and do it. And the worst that you can have, what's the worst that can happen if you pick actions randomly and do it? Your performance with respect to any reasonable external performance metric is likely to be dismal. Okay, of course, we are good at defining performance ourselves and say, you know, what I did is what I wanted to do all along, in which case you are happy, and ants are quite happy. But so the point is that while the hard planning is hard, and even the simplest planning is hard, you can always skip planning. So you can skip this lecture and, you know, basically pick an action randomly. Okay. In as much as you do thinking ahead, it's hopefully to improve your performance with respect to any reasonable external evaluation metric. Okay, so the reason I brought that up is, on one hand, I'm saying all green planning, we don't have an answer as to how to do it efficiently. And yet, we live that planning, right? And we are able to get by. That's because we don't. I mean, face it, you don't do search in your life. You know, I mean, have you ever actually done systematic search to find out something? No. No, you know, we don't do systematic search. We don't do any of these things. I mean, we basically get by. Okay? So we want computers to be nicer than us, and so we are trying to give more information, more look ahead, to pick what action to pick next. Okay? So that's the comforting thought. There is a safety net, you know. If you don't feel like it, you can still live. Not pass this course, but at least live. Okay? So this really is just a different variation on that thing. I'm saying that there are 2^6 different planning problems that you can talk about just with respect to that picture. right? And each of them have a name. And Al Brown here is called the classical planning problem. And then as you throw in, let's say, instead of, I understand these colors are bad, if you start throwing in durative actions, you will start calling it temporal planning problem. If you start throwing in stochastic actions, then you call it stochastic planning, okay? And then what else? If you start throwing in imperfect observation, then you start calling it conditional planning. So because during the execution, you would have to observe the world and decide what actions to do. Okay, now that's kind of interesting. You always think that when you do an action, you have to keep your eyes open, right? I mean, the idea is you look around and then do an action. But in classical planning, is there any advantage of having eyes at all? This one, in this planning? It's been decided. It's sort of like the intelligent design theory, I guess. It's all been decided. And all you need to do is basically pick up. So the world will work exactly the way you expected it to work. The actions are all deterministic, right? And so if you think it and if you decide what are the sequence of actions to do, then you can start doing it. You can close your eyes. Eyes are actually useless for classical planning. So there's no sensing needed. Even if you have a sensor, you don't need it. If the world is like this, you don't need sensing. And so when you have imperfect information about the environment, or your actions are stochastic, then you need to look at the world and see what is the information you have about the current state of the world, and based on that, decide which actions to do. Okay, so that would be called a conditional planning. And you know, there are all sorts of names. If there are other agents in the world, basically you would have, the world would be not static anymore. So you do an action and somebody else does the opposite action. Okay, so it's like stacking blocks with a naughty kid in the room. Okay, you stack A on top of B, that guy unstacks, and you know, no amount of look ahead reasoning is going to help you. Unless you also realize that there is another agent in the world and cooperate with it, you know, give a candy to the kid so that he won't do anything against you. That's what we do when you have multiple agents in the world. Either you take the worst case scenario, you did the game playing, right? Game search tree. So in game search trees, you take the worst case scenario. What's the worst they can do? And still, when they do the worst thing, I would like to at least draw rather than lose the game. Right? That's one possibility. That's really the worst possible scenario. And more interesting games, you can have collision. You can actually try to bribe the other player, you know, bribe the other agent, so that both of you together can reach the goal faster. Now, all of this is more interesting, you know, more interesting planning problems. And each of them have names. And some of them don't have algorithms, they only have names. In the sense, nobody actually figured out how to do them. And then, you know, each of these, notice that many of these lines are actually single lines, but some of them have two lines there, stochastic and partially observable. That's like, your actions are not deterministic, and your eyes are bad, okay? And that is harder than just actions being not deterministic, or just eyes being bad. And then in the end, of course, the green, all green basically is connected to all the green ones. Okay. So this is just to give you an idea that there are a variety of planning problems, and we start with the simplest. Okay. And depending on your interest and my interest, we might look at maybe at least one other more general case, a generalization of the classical planning. Let's say the one which has stochastic actions and imperfect information. And then that's when we'll stop. And then there's a lot more, obviously, to each of the chapters you did in the Intro to AI course. It's just the tip of an iceberg that you can spend your life with. Okay, so that's classical planning. Uh-oh, what happened? Okay, so I'll call classical planning also deterministic planning, because you know the actions are deterministic, and that winds up being the most important simplification. Okay, and now if you have this kind of a planning, the problem itself, that particular version, the planning problem really is given an initial state and a goal state and a set of actions. Okay, find a sequence of actions that when applied from the initial state will lead you to the goal state. That's it. Now what's wrong with this picture? Isn't this what you've been doing from like the first chapter in AI course? This is also called search. Given an initial state and a termination condition and a children generator function, find a path. Okay. So first thing you want to understand is, am I blowing you off by repeating the same thing that you know under different guise? Am I just talking about search and calling it planning? Or is there really any difference between search and planning? Okay. Now, in fact, you can ask yourself, is there any difference between search and anything else that you learned in this course? And if you can't answer that, you haven't understood anything in the course. Okay. Everything involves search. Okay. It's like asking, is there any difference between any part of computer science and Turing machine? Well, yeah, underneath it all, you can formalize everything in terms of Turing machine. And yet, he thinks that there is something called networks, and he thinks that there's something called mining. Okay. So the real question is, you need to understand, how is planning kind of a layer above search? In what sense does it have more information? What sense do you have more leverage than search? Okay. I'm assuming you all understand search. You understand the children generator function, etc. Okay. The answer turns out to be very simple, but you have to keep it in mind, because otherwise there's no difference between planning and search. Okay. So the answer really is that the states in, think about search. In search, what are you given? You're given a bunch of functions. You're not given representations. You're given a bunch of functions. You're given a children generator function. Okay. You are given a termination test function. Okay, and you are given essentially all of these. A children generator function takes as input a data structure which has as part of it a state, and spits out a bunch of data structures which have children nodes with links to their parents. And then the termination function basically takes one of these data structures and says yes or no. If it says yes, you're done. If it says no, you're not done. What's interesting about search is at that level of abstraction where you have no clue as to what the state is and no clue as to what the actions are, other than the fact that these are all black boxes. States are black boxes. You don't even know. You, the reasoner, doesn't even know what's inside the state. Okay, here's the state. I give it to this function. It gives out a bunch of other things. I give it to the termination test. If it says yes, I'm done. But the beauty of search really is, at that level of abstraction, there are many variations of how to do search better versus worse. Okay? And so you learned all that stuff, A star search, local search, all that stuff. Now we are actually saying, we know what's inside the state. For planning problems, there is a representation for state that we can agree upon. There is a representation for operators that we can agree upon. So that you don't need to provide me a children generator function, you just need to provide me the actions which are represented in some form, in some declarative form. And then there is one single function which can basically take a state, a set of actions, and then give me new states. Okay, now you need to understand the difference between this and having a children generator function and a termination function. You know, it's not obvious, and if you don't, you know, please ask me later, whatever. Okay, you need to understand the level of abstraction difference. So now, once you have these factored representations, and you know, I'll give you an example of what a state is like. How a state is essentially things like this. We'll talk about things like this. And this is the idea called state variable representation. Okay, and and I'll give you a couple of interesting things about what a state variable model is. Many of you probably know this, and you know this without realizing that you know this, because you've seen it in lots of places. What you may not have realized is that state variable models are actually one more extra decision over what is required to just run search algorithms. Search algorithms don't need you to even make any decision about the representation. Okay. Now, and so I would talk about state variable models in a minute, but let me just mention, why is it that knowing the inside of the state and knowing the inside of the actions is likely to help you? Well, the reason it's going to help you is in two ways. Ultimately, reasoning is going to be search. Okay, so you're trying to find a path from where you are to some other place, such that that path has some interesting properties. It is short, it has the lowest cost, or whatever. Okay. So the interesting thing is, how could you do that search more flexibly? If I give you a children generator function and a termination test, you can only use them in one way. You can apply this children generator function to a state and you get new state. Can you invert it? Suppose I give you a state from here, could you tell me what could have been the state that when given to this program would have generated these states? That's program inversion. Normally program inversion is not possible. So you have to write a separate children generator function for the second type. Now one of the nice things you'll see in this discussion today for the deterministic planning is I'll give you one single action representation. I'll tell you how to apply them in the forward direction. I'll tell you how to apply them in the reverse direction. Okay? And I'll also tell you how to make this path. You know, one of the interesting things is the way you search goes, essentially you would think as if you have to construct the path from the first point, second, third, fourth, all the way up to the goal. But the way we make plans, we could either go forward reasoning, you could go backward reasoning, and many a time actually you say, well, the most important things I need to do today are job one, job two, and I know that job one needs to be done before job two. So my plan for today, I don't have the concrete idea, but there is a job one that needs to be done, and there's a job two that needs to be done. This precedes this. The rest of the details I'll work out later. Now when you do that, what did you do? You constructed the path not prefix-wise, not suffix-wise, but basically piece-wise. You know, you started putting actions anywhere in the middle. Now it turns out that when you have explicit representations of actions and states, you can do all these things. And all these three searches essentially have nice fancy names in classical planning. One is called progression planning, which is basically going forward. One is called regression planning, which is going backward. And another is called partial order or plan space planning, which is basically think in terms of a null plan, which has, you know, I have nothing to do today. And then, oh, I realize that I have job one to do. So before the day ends, I have to do job one. Oh, and now I realize I have job two also to do. And so before the day ends, I need to do job one and job two. I realize that job one and job two cannot be done at the same time. So either I should do job one first or job two next, or vice versa. Now I also realize that because of the time constraints, I can't do them in this order, so I have to do them in this order. That's a way of doing planning. Okay, that's called partial order or plan space planning. Okay, so we'll look at details of how to do this stuff, basically, but let me now go through pieces. First, let me look at what I mean by state variable model. Okay, this is something that should be obvious, but let me go over it anyway. So all we are saying is the world is basically made up of states. Okay, and all these states are defined in terms of state variables. So each state is defined in terms of assignments of values to a set of state variables. Okay, so I could, for example, have my world be defined in terms of two state variables, color and height. So, and then suppose the color can be one of three colors, height can be one of four numbers, then how many possible states do I have now? Okay. So, you can basically have the state variables and their domains and the worlds are, the states are represented in terms of the state variables. Okay. The simplest way of thinking about state variables, just because you guys have spent all this time on propositional logic, is think in terms of Boolean state variables. But there's no reason for state variables to be Boolean. We will talk mostly about Boolean state variables in the class, but most of the techniques I discussed to you here would also be equally applicable to discrete state variables with non-Boolean, discrete but non-Boolean state variables. And many of them can be, with some effort, extended to work with continuous state variables. I know you guys are in AI and you've forgotten that there used to be a world which had continuous variables, but there are continuous variables, and right, you know, and so you could use them too, okay? Now, so the interesting thing is, let's look at the Boolean, the simple case, Boolean state variables, right? So the states ultimately, a complete state specification. So for every domain, any world that you're trying to model, you decide your number of state variables. Let's say there are k state variables, there are k Boolean state variables. Then every state in this world is an interpretation over these state variables, which also happen to be propositions. If they're Boolean, they're propositions, right? So a state is an assignment of truth, falsity, values to state variables. And if there are k state variables, how many states are there? 2 power k states. Okay? So now the nice thing is the guys who did not have any idea as to what is inside their state are likely to think of 2 power k block boxes. If in fact the world that you are in, is best modeled in terms of just 5 state variables, as far as your problems are concerned, right? Then you are better off thinking in terms of those 5 state variables than thinking in terms of 32 black boxes and saying, I don't know what's in this state. This state has a name. It's like your social security number. It has a unique name, okay? And knowing the content and saying that they are just these state variables helps you say, for example, that the action. Normally, what happens in search is when you apply an operator to a state, you get a new state. So you take the social security number of a state, and you spit out social security numbers of new states. So data structure taken, data structures given out. Now I don't have to do it that way. I can say, for example, that this action, so I might have a state which is defined in terms of 10,000 state variables. Okay? And I might have an action which just flips two of the state variables. Now ask yourself, if you were to write the description of this action in terms of this action applied to this state takes you to this state, it would be a matrix of size what? Anytime I ask you a question, you can say 2 power that number, because most of the questions in computer science, it's always 2 power that number. And that's your devil. In the night, if you wake up, it's not because you saw Saturn, it's because you saw 2 power k. That's your real nightmare. Okay? So if you have 10,000 state variables, you have 2 power 10,000 states. Okay? The easiest way to represent an action is each action is a nice little matrix, which is 2 power 10,000 columns by 2 power 10,000 rows. Each cell here, basically, you would say, you could put like a 1 here, if doing action A in this state gets me to this state. I'll put a 1 there. Okay? Now, from a point of view of deterministic actions, if you have deterministic actions, what happens? All of these rows will have only 1, 1. Right? I'm sorry, if I said it this way, right? So if I, my convention is that there's a 1 here because doing action A in this state, Si, is getting me to this state, Sj. So if you have a deterministic action, right, then each column would have how many 1s? Exactly 1, 1. If you have a non-deterministic or a stochastic action, each column can have many more 1s. Okay, so this is nice. At the level of just states and transformations, all actions are just equally created. They're all equal sized, except that size is behemoth. It's 2 power 10,000 size. Okay. However, if my action really, all it does is to just flip the, 777th state variable from true to false. Okay? Right? Then, it's clearly much easier to write that by just saying all this action does is to flip the state variable value rather than say, look, here is equal size 2 power 10,000. So the reason I'm bringing this up is this is probably one of the naivest points, in the sense everybody assumes that values are made up of state variables. But people also don't realize how much of a computation advantage it is to think of the structure of the world in that way. Okay? So basically, because your states have this internal structure, actions can be written in terms of changing the values of the state variables, rather than be written as equal size matrices, which are state by state, number of state by number. Okay. And then, of course, the applicability actions also can be applied. So one of the other interesting things is, suppose you have a deterministic set of actions. I said, at most, there would be 1, 1 in each column for the action. Is it required that every column should have at least one one? Yes, no, maybe. The TA is giving the wrong answer. That's not good. he also probably is sun dependent. So an action may not even be applicable in a state. Right? If an action is not applicable in a state, then in essence, the output is not defined. So I can have all zeros in that particular column. Okay, so there is this idea of is an action applicable in all states or only some of the states, and that information also is available here. This is your first principles representation of action. Okay, but you can write it in terms of the state variables. You might just say, well, the action is applicable in the case when this state variable and this other state variable are true, in which case it flips the value of this 15th state variable. Okay. Now, having said that, I'll give you some examples which you think are too darn obvious. But so this is an example of state variables in the context of one very simple world, the fruit fly of automated planning, which is blocks world. You know, stacking blocks on top of each other. It's endlessly fascinating. Why are you guys laughing? My God. Anyway, so suppose I have a bunch of blocks and I want to stack them on top of each other. I mean, this is way more complex than have your cake and eat it too. So this is already real world compared to your textbook example. Okay. So anyway, so how would you go about writing state variables? You get to decide. You know, when you represent a world, you decide what are the state variables. It's your choice. Okay. I'll give you one representation for blocks world. You can have another representation for blocks world. All that matters is your actions are consistent with your representation of the world. Okay. So I am thinking that my world will have the following state variables: on table X, on X Y, clear X, hand empty, and holding X. And now I put X's there as if it's first order predicate logic. Except that's just syntactic sugaring. What I'm really going to have is if there are 15 blocks in my problem, then I will have 15 holdings, holding A, holding B, holding C, etc., holding 15. Okay? And then if there are 15 blocks, then there are on XY for each pair of blocks, there will be a state variable, including on AA and on BB. Those are all state variables. Okay? Now, so if that, those are my state variables, and then the initial state would have to be, remember that initial state, so I'll say that the initial state is a complete specification of truth, falsity values to state variables. That means initial state is an actual state. A state is a complete assignment, so initial state is an actual state. Okay, and you'll start seeing why I'm making this big deal about why an actual state, because it turns out that goals don't have to be single state. Goals can be a description over multiple states. Okay? So initial state is an actual state which is giving a complete assignment on these variables and their values. And then, you know, if you know that you're giving values for all the variables, and if your variables are all Boolean, then by convention you can decide to keep either the true ones or the false ones and ignore the rest. Okay? For some reason, you know, it's like the cultural thing, we always think one color is right, one color is wrong, and we think true is good, false is bad. You know, actually, it's an important issue. It turns out that false is just as reasonable as true. Sometimes you can have negative goals. That doesn't make you a bad person. Okay? I mean, just as sinister meant left-handed, and you know how sinister is not a good word to use about people. And similarly, people having negative goals could be not destroy the world. It's a good goal. Okay, so you could have negative goals. Okay, so by convention, you decide which ones you will remember. You know, either you keep the positives or negatives, and then if you have a complete state, if you just keep all the ones which are positive, the rest are negative. Okay, negative meaning false. Now, goal state is a partial specification of the. When do I stop by there?
55.
Okay. So goal state is a partial specification of desired state variable value combination. So the idea really is, what I'm saying is, I am in this particular state, get me to any state which has the following properties. And there may be more than one such state. Okay. So, for example, if I have 15 blocks in the initial state, all of them are, you know, nicely on the table, and I say, get me to a state where A is on B. So, my goal is on AB. That is consistent with a huge number of real states. That's good. You're easily satisfied. You know, you don't have too many things. All you're saying is, just get me a world where A is on top of B, I would leave you alone. Okay? The more goals, more states that are consistent with your goal, the easier the problem is, because it's easier to solve. The fewer states, the harder the problem is. You know, if there's only one state, probably it's much harder to find the solution, you know, find a path for that. Okay? So even in the classical planning, this is like the simplest of simple cases, initial state is a complete state, goal state is a partial state. Now, the word state is going to be used by everybody, including me, sometimes to mean just search state, in which case it actually can correspond to multiple world states. Okay, so I will say goal state when I really mean goal state. And I say initial state, and for classical planning, it only means initial state. Now, let's go out and, you know, jump ahead and say the following question, which is, first of all, why do we think initial state is a complete state? In classical planning, why should it be? And what in this picture here, oh my God. What in this picture here ensures you that initial state is going to be a complete state? Come up, course, it's changed. You know, the one that you saw. If you go back, obviously it makes sense. Right? Which of these ensures that the initial state is a complete state? No. You can have deterministic actions and yet not know where you are. Is it not possible? Wake up in the middle of the night. You are a young man. You know how to walk. You don't make mistakes. And yet you have no clue where you are. And how do you... What?
Observable then?
Exactly. All that is needed is complete observability. If you have complete observability, then you know where you are. It's important to know which of these cause which of the assumptions. That's the way you figure out whether you're understanding something or not. Okay. So, it's the observability that makes sure that the initial state is a single state. What does that then mean? Right now, already goal state is not a single state. Even in classical planning, goal state can be a set of states. But in classical planning, initial state is a single state. So what do I need to do to make initial state also be a set of states? Just have bad eyesight. That's it. So if you have partially observable world, or you have no observability at all, you can't see the world, okay, then you essentially, all you can say is, I am in one of so many states. Suppose you know that your world has k state variables, and you have no eyes to talk of. So your initial state corresponds to how many possible real states? 2 power k. Told you, just say 2 power k, always, okay. It corresponds to 2 power k initial state, 2 power k real state, okay. So you have no clue. And if you know a little bit, I mean, you have like poor eyesight, so you can kind of see, you know, objects but not colors, then what would wind up happening is you will know the values of some of the state variables in your initial state, but not the others. So if there are 5 state variables and you know the values of 4 of them, the other one, the fifth one you're not sure of, then your initial state is really 2 power 1, 2 states. Okay, so observability, as we lose observability, which we will do by the next class, we will start actually having initial state, which is a set of states, goal state, which is a set of states. Okay. Let's see. So now the next thing I want to talk about is action. And this action essentially is picking up X, apparently. And all it is going to do is, I'm going to say, remember that each state is defined in terms of state variables and their values. All the preconditions need to tell me is, given a complete state, is this action applicable there or not? Okay, so I should say what must be true in the state in which I am trying to apply this action. Now notice that in this example, all I am saying is what must be true is that your name either should be S15 or S75 or S99 or S2755, in which case I am applicable. But really, all I might actually be interested in is that your color is red, then I am applicable. And that's much easier to say. So that's what you would say in the preconditions. You would say, it's applicable whenever color equals to red. Or in this particular case, pickup is applicable whenever hand empty, the state variable hand empty happens to be true. Okay? And the X that you're trying to pick up is clear. Okay? And then on table, X is true. Now again, I'll play this game and act as if these English names actually mean what you and I think they mean. Okay? But to make sure that they mean what you and I think they mean, you need to make sure that the actions do the right thing. You can't just make something by just calling it a name. Okay? But you know, it's easier to discuss it this way. Okay? So I want hand empty to be true, clear X to be true, untable X to be true, and the effect would be what parts of the, so now the what action needs to do is, given a state description, it needs to provide me the new state description. Now I'm in the deterministic world, I'm in the classical world, right? So I know that when I apply it to a single state, I will get exactly a single state or nothing at all, in which case it's not applicable. Okay, so I just need to doctor the old state such that I'll get the new state. So effects are telling me how to doctor the old state. The assumption is you copy over the entire old state to the new state side first, and then modify only these variables such that they'll have the values I say they should have. That's it. So that's how I change the state. Okay? So it's an algebra now. It's just basically changing a state into a new state by lobotomizing it, changing its state variable values to be different. Okay? Similarly stack XY, similarly unstack XY, similarly put down X. And I would not presume to teach you the physics of blocks world, but if you have questions, my son is available. He's very good at it. So these are the four actions, and so these are the descriptions of these actions. One question I have, just one question, which is, clearly these descriptions are so small compared to what those descriptions are. My question is this, and this could be an exam question, if you want, which is it guaranteed that in the worst case, all actions will always be smaller than that size? Is it definite that for any possible world I take, and any possible state variables I take, any possible action I take, it's always possible to write action description for that action in the factored form to be much smaller than its explicit description? The answer turns out to be no. Okay? In fact, I can write worlds where, in essence, writing their factored description is going to take just as many pages as writing your matrix. Okay? Remember when I said, you know, this guy was telling me what are all the states where he's applicable in by just numbering them, right? And then I said blithely that, look, you know, when you realize that all those states have common is red color, and so you just have to say color red in the precondition. What if they have nothing in common? What if it really is a case by case application of the action? In that case, in the worst case, you would have bad action. But in that worst case, probably we wouldn't be around here, because the world that we live in is so complex that there is no locality to the actions that you do. Okay? One of the nicest things that's happening is this can be thought of as a locality for the actions, in the sense they're only changing a few of the state variables at a time. And you more or less take it for granted when you wake up in the morning and you're about to touch the light. My God, you hope that it's not going to blow up something in next neighbor's home. Even though they're all part of the state variables of your world, you think local actions have only local effects. Okay? And if they are not, we make the world that way. You know, it's not, in fact, our kids, when they grow, when they're born, they don't know what are the right levels of locality. And so we teach them, how we make life simpler for them such that in the little playpen that they're doing, you know, it definitely is the case that whatever they do doesn't blow up the house.
They learn the butterfly effect.
Butterfly effect. But the advantage is butterfly effect is the exception rather than the rule. Otherwise, we won't be here to learn about butterfly effect. Okay, that's the important thing to understand. So what this is doing is it's trying to exploit the structure that is likely to be present in most worlds that you want to live in, as if, and by extension your agents want to live in. And so in those cases it does that. Okay. I think of this sort of an analogy to be the analogy between microwave ovens and conventional ovens. Okay. Everybody wants to use microwave ovens. But that's not, it's not the case that microwave ovens are always faster than conventional ovens. Right? I mean, if you have one potato to bake, do it with a microwave oven. If you have 1,000, get an industrial strength conventional oven and be done with it. Right? And the reason more people have microwave ovens than conventional, industrial strength conventional ovens is because most people aren't trying to bake 10,000 potatoes, I hope. Okay. And so where you can get efficiency, you catch it, you take it. And that's what the factor representations try to do. Okay, that's the definition. Now what's interesting about this lecture, and I guess it sort of gives you how crazy I am, is I could have just shown you this as the first slide and you would have probably understood pretty much most of what I'm saying. Okay, but I feel good if I gave you this long a lecture as to why you should thank your stars that this representation is actually different from a simple search representation. Okay. Now once I have those action descriptions and those states, all I need to do is do search. And I can go forward, I can go backward. And I'll do both of those in today's class, and then we'll talk about other things next. Okay, so the going forward, I already told you, essentially. Going forward is actually applying the actions the way they are meant to be applied. Okay, so you want to apply pickup A to this state, right? What you do is you check whether all the preconditioned state variables of pickup A have the required values in this state. If so, you can apply it. And then what you do, you copy this whole thing over here. Okay? And then you start overwriting them. Overwriting those state variables that are in the pickup A's effect. That if pickup A says something different from this guy, you know, whatever pickup A says holds. Because that's the guy who made the effect. All the other ones about which this guy has nothing to say, they'll just copy over. So the ones in black got copied over, the ones in red, other ones that have changed. Now in this example, it looks as if more things got copied, more things got changed and less things got copied over. That's because it's a toy example. Okay. In most, you know, worlds, what would happen is if you have 15 blocks and all you are really interested in is like something which is satisfied by two blocks, initial state will still have of the order of, you know, some 2 power 15 facts, 2 power 15 assertions. Okay. And in fact, it's a nice little exercise for you to do the following thing. If you have, let's say, pick a number of blocks, k blocks, okay, in a blocks world, how many state variables would there be for a k blocks world? Write an algebraic expression for that. And it's kind of interesting. Because remember, some of them will be unsquared because there's an x, y sort of thing. Okay, because blocks are not state variables. Blocks are the objects, and state variables are represented in terms of the objects. So, in fact, now the number of blocks would determine some polynomial number of state variables. The polynomial number of state variables then will determine an exponential number of states. So it's like three levels now. Okay. Okay. So I can generate one, you know, for each action I can generate a state. All I just told you here is I told you that you can just have one schematized children generator function, which takes as input a state description. It could be block world state description, it could be any world state description. All it is needed is it knows what are the state variables and, you know, which of them are true, which of them are false. And it takes these actions, which are represented in this precondition effect fashion, and it can spew out what are all the children. For each one action, there is at most one child. It will generate that. That's it. That's all we accomplished till now. Okay? And then, so, how do I stop? The question about how do I stop is based on what is it that I'm trying to do. And I haven't decided what I'm trying to do. Did I? Oh yeah, I did. I've decided that the problem I'm trying to solve is that. Okay? So A is on table, B is on table, A is clear, B is clear, hand is empty. And my goal is B should not be clear. I purposely put a negative goal just so that you will know that goals can be negative. All I care about is B should not be clear and a hand should be empty. You can see a plan, right? It's late in the night, but it's still possible. I mean, all you need to do is get some random block, put it on top of B. And then B is no longer clear. And then you have your hand hanging around, so you have reached the goal state. Now, there are many, many states which satisfy this goal state. For each possible block that is on top of B, there's a different state. So in this particular case, actually, there's only A, so that's the only thing that's clear. Okay, so that's my goal. And so all I need to do in progression is check whether any of these states are consistent with the goal state. I mean, I've basically achieved the goal state. How do I do that? Goal state really is a set of states. Okay? Yeah, my goal state is a set of states which has all those states have the following thing in common. They all have clear B false, and they all have hand empty true. That's the only thing that you care. So, is there any of them here? Clear B true, so this is not a goal state. You're dead here. In this case, clear B is false, so it could be a goal state, but hand empty is not true, so goal it's not a goal state. So you can't terminate here. And then, so you take one of these states, you expand it further, you apply the goal state description. So again, the second thing that I just told you is, even the termination step is not a black box code. It's just match your goals to your state description. Okay? And in fact, from the point of view of, if you think, okay, here's a nice thing to think about. I said that all states are complete assignments, right? And we are talking about Boolean state variables. So really this state is what kind of a propositional formula? You know logic, propositional logic. So what is this, what kind of a propositional formula is this? It's conjunctive, it's disjunctive, it's implicative, it's what? It's a big conjunction, right? And now it so happens that I gave my goals in this case to be also a conjunction. I don't have to give my goals to be conjunction. In fact, I could easily have done it in such a way that either B should be clear or a hand should be empty. That is my goal. Okay, so now what happens is I have my from the point of view of propositional logic, I have some state that I have come to by applications of action. And I check if this state entails my goal formula. That's all. So termination constraint is you can use your logic. Now, for the special case where the goals are conjunctive, then entailment between two conjunctive formulas, two ground conjunctive formulas, is just set membership check. Right? A and B and C can only entail either A or A and B or A and C or B and C or A, B and C. So that's partly why we act as if the termination here really, the termination really is to match the goals to the state. But it's important to understand that what we are really trying to do is that entailment, which for this special case is an element check. Now connect it all up in your head. Now the moment you realize it's an entailment, then I could actually, without changing anything, I could have made this goal to be some arbitrary propositional formula. So it has implications, it has parentheses, it has conjunctions, it has disjunctions, negations, everything. And yet, that formula would correspond to either a non-null or null set of states. Okay? And all you need to do is to know whether or not you can stop, whether the current state entails this goal. And since the current state is an interpretation, right? Current state is actually assignment for all the values. Okay, checking whether or not a formula is true in an interpretation is good or bad compared to theorem proving. What's the cost of propositional theorem proving? Couldn't be complete. Bad stuff. Okay? But in propositional theorem proving, what you're doing is if a formula F1 entails formula F2, to check that, you want to see all the models, all the worlds where F1 is true, all the worlds where F2 is true, and make sure that in every world where F1 is true, F2 is also true. It's because this is a bunch of worlds, this is a bunch of worlds that your life is miserable. Okay? Whereas if you have an interpretation, which is actually a single world, an interpretation by definition is a single world. There's only one world which is cut, you know, right with respect to that. So checking whether the entailment holds is basically checking, you know, applying the truth values to this complex formula using your Boolean logic and saying yes or no, which is your CSE triple E120. Okay, the reason I'm saying this is there are simple parts I'm explaining to you how to do. There are way more complex things you can do just because you already know a lot more about AI than what I'm teaching you today. Okay, all of that is in your fingertips. Okay. So think of ultimately termination check in terms of propositional entailment. Okay, and which for the special case of full states happens to be state membership check. Okay, so this is your generic progression planner. Okay, all it does is it starts with the state, it applies all the actions to the state, generates the new states, applies all the actions to those states, and every once in a while it checks if any of the states are terminating, and using this entailment check, if so it stops. Now that's your search procedure. And the important difference is the child generator is not being given to you as a black box. You know what's inside the child generator. And the termination is not being given to you as a black box. You know what's in the termination criteria. Now, when you know the inside of the state, so for example, you're supposed to reach state, suppose you're supposed to find the person whose social security number is, 795959998. And you just found somebody whose social security number is 795998995. How far are you from the person you're trying to find? No clue. Right? If you all you have is the names of the states, you could be right next to the goal state and you have no clue. Whereas if you know the insides of the state and all you're trying to do is a state where these 15 variables are true, and you just found a state which has 14 of these variables true, it's reasonable to expect, unless you are in Rubik's Cube world, that you're pretty darn close to the answer.
So your social security number has the 15 numbers. No,
I did definitely not give my social security number, believe me. So that's why I had to go very hard. Okay, so the point is the inside. Knowing the inside of the state allows you to figure out your progress, and you can actually use that to decide how close, how far away you are from the goal state. And what's the most important thing about search? Heuristic. Okay? How do you do search fast? Okay? If you know more about your insides of your states, you can use that structure to actually devise heuristics. And much of what we would do really is going to be about the heuristics part. Okay? But before I go there, let me tell you one more thing. Okay, so this one actually, what happened? Okay, so this is another example. This is the one in the textbook. It has, for the baking cake, they provided a set of actions, baking the cake and eating it. They provided a set of actions and state variables. So the point is, you can just make up your proposition names, state variable names, and you can make up your actions, and you have changed the domain. But the underlying progression planner doesn't care. All it needs is it can eat action descriptions, it can eat state descriptions, and it can generate children. Okay? So, the next thing I want to do is sort of make up on a promise I made earlier, which is these actions can be done forward as well as backward. Okay, I may not want to do it that way, but I'll tell you how to do it. Okay, it's kind of cute because you would have thought that the action, once it's given in terms of preconditions effect, can be inverted. And I'll tell you how to do that. Okay. So if you know how to invert it, then you have a backward search. You can start from the goal state, which actually is not a state, which is a formula corresponding to multiple states. And you regress to get sets of states, sets of states, sets of states. And when can you stop? When can you stop? So I haven't even told you how to do this. Okay, all I'm saying is, suppose I have the goal state and I figure out the magic of how to apply actions in the reverse direction. Right? And then so I apply this action, I'll get another formula. Each formula normally corresponds to multiple interpretations. Right? That's the whole point of formula. It's a special case if the extreme cases are it only corresponds to one. Or it actually can also correspond to none. That's the other problem with formulas. A formula can correspond to no worlds. Can you have propositional formulas that don't correspond to any worlds at all? Yeah? What would be that propositional formula? What must be true of it? Well, it's a contradiction. It's inconsistent. Can, given an arbitrary propositional formula that I give you, can you tell very quickly whether it's consistent or not? I'm asking a very simple question, which is, given a really large propositional formula, which could be 2 pages long, I just give it to you, and you need to tell me, yes, it's consistent. That means it does not entail false. No, it's not consistent. How hard is that? Yeah. Many things aren't also doable, but this particular thing essentially is what? It's a theorem proving. Checking consistency is theorem proving. You're trying to prove that false is entailed by a formula. So its worst case complexity is co-NP complex. Okay, so you start with a formula. As you regress, you get more formulas. Some of these, all these formulas you hope correspond to multiple states, a set of states. The set can be empty, which is not good. Okay, if it's empty set, there's no point in going forward on it, right? But suppose it's not empty, how do you know when to stop? So suppose I give you, after these many steps, I get to a formula F. Think of what you can do in terms of the entailment, which will allow you to stop. What entailment check can I do to stop? Does the formula entail the initial state? Is that true? Okay, so here is the idea. So suppose I have the initial state is a block which is red and it is 15 kilograms heavy and all that stuff and it's on top of B, etc. Okay, I have a goal state. By regressing it, I said, if you can make the block to be red, then I'll do this to do something to the block, I'll do this to do something else to the block, and finally I'll get you to the goal state. So all I'm saying is, just give me the block to be red, and I got you the problem solved. Now you are saying, red should entail that block is red, and the block has 15,000 kilograms weight, and block is on top of B. That's not the way. You want, again, the opposite. You always want initial state entails this formula. If you're in doubt, just, you know, do a dimensional analysis. You know, think of an example. Okay? So, basically, you are sub-goaling. You're thinking of, these are the big goals you're trying to do. By applying these actions, you are hopefully changing what you're trying to achieve to something else that you need to achieve. So, in essence, this is your goal state now. Because if you can reach this, then I know how to go. And whether or not I can reach this is a question of whether initial state entails this. Now, so in essence, actually, without yet talking about what regression is, I've now given you a way of doing both regression and progression at the same time, if you want, right? Which is your bidirectional search. So you start with I. Okay, and one of the states that you came from here is Si. I started at the same time, I had nothing else to do, started at the goal state, kept going backwards. One of the states I got here is Sg. If I can show that Si entails Sg, then that's my path, that's my plan. So basically, this is the initial state representative, this is the goal state representative. Initial state should always entail the goal state. This guy is the representative of the initial state because he's going in this direction. Okay. So now, I have everything ready except how to actually generate these formulas in the backward direction. Okay. Pretty easy, don't worry. So you, here is your, basically the regression is defined in terms of first, whether or not you can regress an action over a state, and secondly, if you regress, what state does come. And when I say state, I mean a formula. Okay. So what I'm saying is the following. So you can regress an action, I mean, you can regress a state. The terminology is that you regress a state over an action. The idea would then be the state gets morphed into some other state, such that if that guy is true before this action, then what you want would be true after the action. That's what is backward application. So if you want to apply an action A in the backward direction, then in essence what you're saying is, what would be the state that should be true before A, such that after A is applied, I would get to the state I really want to be in. That's what regression is, right? Okay, so in this particular case, what we are interested in is to decide whether or not it can be regressed, and if it is regressed, what is the new state description. Okay. The if part, you can regress it as long as this action, remember this action will have certain effects. It's going to change the state after it. If it is trying to make clear B true as one of its effects, and you have clear B false as requirement, there is no point in doing that as the last action. Okay? So all I'm saying is, if one of your goals is to be Phoenix, you better not consider as the very last action you do flying from Las Vegas to Los Angeles. It's a no-brainer. If that's the last action, then you are in Los Angeles, which is not Phoenix as yet. Okay? And so you're dead. One of your goals is not true. Okay? So where this guy affects, I mean, if this guy, for the set of state variables that are mentioned both in the effects of the action and in the goal, the first requirement is the action is giving consistent labels, labels that are, assignments that are consistent with the goal. So if you're touching that variable at all, you better be touching it in such a way that it will have the value that is required to have. If you're not touching it, that's fine. Okay, so if I want to be in Phoenix, okay, I can very well have, I mean, if I want to be in Phoenix and have good food, my last action for my plan could well be go to Olive Garden or something. Because Olive Garden is not getting me to Phoenix, but it's not getting me out of Phoenix either. So it's consistent with my Phoenix goal. Okay, first do no harm. So that's the applicability issue. First do no harm. Yes, sir. What is put down in a description? Okay, so this is put down A. So it says, put down A says, holding A must be true before it, and after it, A would be on table, hand should be empty, A should be clear, X should be held. I mean, X is not being held. That's what it is. Okay, so your question now?
Conditions that have to be applied in the put down A.
Mm-hmm.
Just map them or make the new previous state that shows that this is a precondition that has to be true.
If so, here's the point. If the first thing is, it better be the case that this guy is not inconsistent with what you are trying to achieve. If it's not inconsistent, then the question is it giving it? If it is giving it, then I don't need to worry about that goal anymore. If it's not inconsistent and it's not giving it, then I better have somebody else work on it. So I copy that goal over to the previous level. So that's the steps that we have. So if you look, so if there is no variable V such that V is given different values by the effects of the action A and the state S, that's first requirement. And that's the requirement. If that requirement is satisfied, you are not doing any harm. The other thing is, as long as you have a last action, it better be achieving something useful. So for example, if my goal is to be in Phoenix and be well fed, okay, sleeping as the last action is not achieving any of them. It's not achieving well fedness, unless I'm being intravenously fed while I'm sleeping, and it's not achieving being in Phoenix. So that's not a last action. So it could be that coming to Phoenix, eating and sleeping will still guarantee that I have achieved my goals. But there is a subset of my plan which also achieves my goals. What that then means is the other plan is non-minimal. It's longer than is needed. Okay. So in fact, the second thing tries to make sure that the plan is minimal. It tries to make sure that the plan is not non-minimal. That's what it tries to make sure. Which is different from saying it's minimal. Okay. So there is at least one variable V dash such that V dash is given the same value by the effects of A as well as the state S. So you're not doing any harm and you're at least doing one thing good. In which case you are okay. I'll regress myself over you. And when I regress myself over you, what I do is all the variables which are actually being given by him, their values, they won't be copied over. Everything else would be copied over. That's fine. But what else is needed? So if this guy is not giving one of these goals, you know, that goal will get copied over. So that the other goal would be given by him. So if I'm in a state where that goal is already achieved, and I do this action, the second goal also would be achieved. The question, of course, is this action applicable in that state? I don't know. You know, for the action to be applicable, its precondition should be true. So what I do is, so first thing I do is copy over all the variables whose values this guy is not giving, and then add on to it the entire precondition assignment of the action to it, because the action should be applicable. That's it. Okay? So every variable that occurs in the precondition list of A will be copied over to F dash with the value that it has in the precondition list. Okay, I'm purposefully going in terms of assignments rather than truth and falsities, because I don't want you to think goal should be positive or goal should be negative. This description will make sure that they can be negative, they can be positive, you will do the right thing. Okay, and so when you do this, you'll get a formula. And that formula can then be regressed further. And as you'll come up to something like a formula here, and at some point of time, one of the formulas that came from this direction can be shown to be entailing this formula. In which case you can stop. Now, for the special case where these formulas are all conjunctive, and it turns out that for the representation of actions that I gave you, I can show you that these formulas will always be conjunctive. It's a nice plan. Okay? So these formulas will be conjunctive, the formulas that come from that side will be conjunctive too. So checking, you know, entailment between two conjunctions is set membership check. Right? So the regression in the simple case is again a set membership check. Okay. So very last thing I'll do and then we get to go home today. So as I said, termination is really entailment, which in the special case happens to be set membership check. Let me ask you this. Could we do put down B from this state? Can we regress this state over put down B? No. Why not? Exactly. So put down B, no. You can't do put down B because of what? Exactly. Put down B will give as its one of its effects clear B. But you don't want B to be clear. So it's inconsistent on this state variable. So it's out. So by cutting that down, you ensure that there are some extra paths that are killed. I'll ask you one other question, and this is tricky one, which is, are all these, which of these states are likely to actually lead to solution? And this requires expertise in block world, I guess. Which of these states are likely to send you to? This is block world, guys. No. So, no. So, first of all, let me ask you a simple question. Does this lead you ultimately to the goal state? I'll ask you an even simpler question. Tell me the number of worlds in the blocks world, number of states in the blocks world that are consistent with this formula.
Where we have just plots A and B?
Yeah.
None.
None. Yeah. Is this obvious to you? Is it likely to be obvious to your program? The point I'm trying to make is these formulas, I told you, formulas could be bad. You know, formulas are sets of states where the set can be empty. And here was an empty set that's staring at you. And I had to make a big, you know, function about it for you to see that this is an obvious thing. Okay, and your program is no better off. It's basically, it can check for inconsistency, but it'll take months, time. If you don't check for inconsistency, what will happen? You can regress over this. You can go on and on and on and on. At some point of time, some states will not have any children because you can't regress them over any actions, and so you die naturally there. But the worst thing you can do in a search is to make a dead node have children, who will then procreate to have more dead nodes, who will then procreate to have more dead nodes. The worst possible thing you can do in search is to expand a dead node. But unfortunately, checking whether a node is dead is not easy. Because that's, again, checking whether or not a formula is inconsistent is hard. Now, here's the interesting thing. Is this formula inconsistent? Is it logically inconsistent? No, it's not logically inconsistent. So why do you say there is no world?
It's inconsistent with the initial state.
So we have a much harder notion of inconsistency. We are talking about this whole notion of reachability. If you start from the initial state and you do legal things, will you ever get to a world which will be consistent with this? No. And that's not an obvious thing. It's not at all easy to check. And yet, if you can check that, you can cut that node and you can improve search. That leads me to my last slide and we'll go today, which is better? And that's really the war of progression versus regression. And I'll give you both answers. Neither of them is better, in essence. So in favor of regression, regression has much lower branching factor. So you have like 5 goals. Even in a 10,000 state variable world, you probably have your goals in terms of a very small subset. You only have 5 goals, so you will have much fewer actions that are relevant to those goals, and you're only considering those in the backward direction. Progression, on the other hand, has many more children. You wake up in the morning and you say, what all can I do? My God, you can do lots and lots of things. You have to ask yourself, what the heck do I want to achieve by the end of the day, and then go backward. And then that tells you what should you be doing now that you woke up. So there's a much higher branching factor in the progression, much lower branching factor in the regression. So advantage, what? Regression. Because search is B power D. Right? Now I'll change my tone and say, well, regression actually can be bad. Because regression is really searching in the space of sets of states. It's searching in the space of sets of states. So if there are k state variables, there are 2 power k states. If there are 2 power k states, how many sets of states are there? 2 power k. 2 power k. Sets of states. It's a much bigger space. And worse yet, some of these states, some of the formulas that you have may actually be inconsistent completely. That means they are not consistent with any of the reachable states. And so, yes, you have much smaller branching factor, but you could be spending your lifetime going in the wrong direction. So that's advantage. Whereas, on the other hand, for progression, everything you get to is a consistent state. You lived by the rules, you started from your initial state, you did the legal things, you got to the state. So it's a consistent state. Okay, you may not be going anywhere, but at least where you are is not against the law. And this thing, you know, could be actually against the law, in the sense you can't reach this place from where you are, from any normal place. Okay, so it's all messy now. Now suddenly the advantage is progression from this point of view. Now the real answer is who is going to win is whoever has the rich uncle, ultimately. Rich uncle in search is heuristics. Whoever has the uncle telling them the direction they should be taking, it doesn't matter how big the branching factor is. If I know exactly the branch to take, I win. B power D is for the losers who actually do blind search, right? So we want to be winners, and next class what we'll do is figure out how to do heuristics such that you can actually get guidance on which branch to take. And all heuristics ultimately are abstractions. They solve abstract problem fast and use that solution to solve the concrete problem. So we'll talk about what abstractions were. And if all that is over, I'll have another slide of this type saying progression versus regression, the great war part two, and I'll confuse you more as to what is likely to work better, and you will think one thing is likely to work better, and I'll tell you the other actually works better in practice. Okay? So if you're interested, come back. Thank you.
I suppose to, yeah, I said to you that it's a